This is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. Every weekday, we talk with public officials, business and education leaders, nonprofit organizations, and more about the issues of the day as we work hard to help you stay connected with local news and information. Now, here's Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Afternoon. Thanks for spending part of your time here with us as we cover a lot of things around the Umpqua Valley and beyond. A lot of the focus right now is what is happening in Salem, both with the legislative session, but also some of the campaigns as we're heading into campaign season. Another candidate for governor, State Representative Ed Deal, back on with us today. Ed, thanks for being on.
You bet, Kyle. Great to be with you.
So let's kind of back up to what led to you getting into the race for governor. I mean, you've been busy as a legislator, but not that long comparatively to a lot of folks who may ultimately seek the office. What was it about your time in Salem that made you feel like that the governor's job was what you wanted to work towards next?
Well, if you would ask me in 2021, if I was going to be in the legislature, much less running for governor, I would have said you're crazy. But a lot has changed between then and now. You know, Kyle, for me, part of it has to do with the referendum, but I truly believe that I'm the best person to take on Governor Kotek. And that has to do with my business background, my engineering background, and I think the leadership I demonstrated with the transportation tax and fee referendum. What I see from our governor, and part of this is just 40 years of one-party governance, and I don't care what party it is, but it'll be 40 years to the inauguration day that we've had one party running the state. And you can only do that for so long before you end up with a government that is unaccountable, and that's what we have. A government that is unaccountable to the people. And we saw that with the referendum. We see it with agency budgets that are bloated and a doubling of our state budget. So just in 10 years. So I feel I'm the best person that can bring accountability back to our government, bring affordability back to citizens, and really create a thriving economy. And my vision for Oregon, we live in the most beautiful state in the country. We do. It's one of the reasons I live here. But I also want the greatest state in the country to live, work, raise a family, and retire. And that's my vision for this state.
You mentioned the referendum, and of course, right now is the attempt to move that referendum from what organizers, including yourself, had planned to have it in November to May. That got approved by the Senate on Monday, but the House not taking it up yet, and it's going to be an interesting situation regarding timing, according to what the Secretary of State has said earlier.
Yes, this is a real battle right now, and I can tell you there's a lot of even Democrats in this building that are not comfortable with this, because this is a lot more than moving the referendum date. This is bypassing multiple statutes and multiple timeframes that are put in statute, and putting the legislature back between the people and this decision. And it's frankly, it's unbelievable to me that that the governor is pushing this, and she is pushing it. But this thing would not only move the election date or the referendum date from November to May, even though 250,000 plus people signed a petition that said we want this in November, it also puts the legislature, the Democrat majority, in charge of the explanatory statement. Normally, that's handled by a balanced citizen committee that includes proponents and opponents. But what this does is says the Democrat majority will write that explanatory statement. So the same institution whose law is being referred is writing the official explanation that voters receive. That, to me, that's outrageous. It rewrites the financial estimate process. It compresses the ballot title timeline. It even reduces, maybe eliminates, the time that voters have to get arguments in the ballot. I don't see how there's any time for a citizen to gather signatures you know, you need 500 signatures to put an argument in the voter pamphlet. That time is completely taken away. So this is far more than moving an election date. This is the legislature intervening and overriding the will of the people. And I think people should be outraged.
For the change of the structure and how the explanatory statement would be composed under this, has that ever happened before?
It has not, to my knowledge, it has not happened in this way. Quite often, what's happened in the past is there'll be a bill that is referable, meaning it doesn't have an emergency clause. But in that legislation, it will say if this bill is referred, it will go on the May election. That's been done before. But to my knowledge, we've never had this situation where a bill is referred, signatures are validated, it is basically approved for the November ballot, and then the legislature comes in after the fact and moves it. I would even argue that that's not what the Constitution allows. That alone on its face is unconstitutional. And then you have all these compressed timelines and overriding existing statute. So we're in uncharted territory with this one.
So beyond this particular bill, there's a lot of other things that you're wanting to address running for governor. What would be, if you got through the process and you won in November, became governor, what are some of the things you would want to deal with in the first 30 days?
Well, absolutely. One of the number one things for me is to restore accountability with our agencies and get our financial ship in shape. And what that would mean is, number one, 100% audits on every single agency by fund and sub-fund. to me, that's essential to restoring trust in our government agencies. By the time I get in office, too, I will have selected who will lead those agencies, and we will have new priorities set to get every single agency back on mission. So that is probably that's the number one thing for me.
And getting in there, being governor, is a lot different than being in the legislature. Talk about your background in business and how you feel that would help you if you were to be governor.
Absolutely. So, you know, I'm new to the political game. I've served in the legislature since 2023. And before that, I spent my career in business and engineering. I have a bachelor's and master's in mechanical engineering. I met my wife at Stanford University. That was the best thing about Stanford. And we moved to Oregon after college. I grew up in Montana on a cattle ranch. But we moved to Oregon, and a few years after that, we started a business. And that business was all designed around control systems integration and factory automation. Our job was to make manufacturers efficient and effective. And I believe that's essential, that the United States makes stuff. We don't just be the guys that think about it. We make it. That's jobs. That's national security. There's so many reasons for that. So I spent my career in manufacturing, and I started a business with two young kids, and I sold a car. I leveraged my credit cards, and I built a thriving business with 100 employees and multiple offices. I worked very hard at that. I'm very proud of the work we did. But that's how I bring that perspective, that analytical perspective and that business perspective, into all the work that I do in the Capitol. And I think that background is really, really unique as far as my opponents in this race. They don't have that kind of background or experience. And frankly, I think we need more of that in the legislature, and it would be wonderful to have that in the governor's office. I think we need a governor that has a lot of private industry experience.
Coming from the business community, what's your assessment of how Oregon, the state of Oregon government, treats its business community?
Not very good. We give a lot of lip service, to business. The governor talks about how important prosperity is, but you tell me what single piece of legislation is going through this building that is pro-business. It is anti-business, one bill after another. In fact, we just voted on a bill yesterday that will raise taxes on Oregon businesses by $300 million by removing the depreciation rates that were accelerated under H.R. 1, the federal Big Beautiful Bill. Those tax benefits at the state level have been removed. That's just one example. We have a business development agency that unfortunately is ineffective at the direction of the legislature and the governor that needs to be focused. As the next governor, I will make real goals for business development. 55,000 jobs created in the next 4 years and $20 billion of capital investment into the state in the next 4 years. I will streamline permitting processes, get our agencies to focus on getting to a yes instead of being a roadblock to businesses. So you'll see, you'll have a governor that will be meeting with business to find out how we can help them grow and also be working actively to bring business into the state with good paying jobs. That is just simply not happening right now, and I don't even think the governor knows how to make that happen.
What would you do in terms of working with the lawmakers? I mean, there's a lot of things that governor could certainly do and lead on their own, but there's also a lot of things that need to go through the legislative process, as you could tell being in it right now. How do you work with the lawmakers when you're over in the executive branch?
Yeah, well, the first thing, that the way I approach in the building will be the same way I approach the governor's office. I try to find common ground with everybody, and I work with everybody, and I focus on policy. And what that means is I'll fight tooth and nail with someone on a bill that is opposed to my values and where I know that the Oregon people are at. I'll fight tooth and nail with them on that bill, and then I'll co-chief a bill with him that is the right answer for the Oregon people. And so I will take that same approach as governor to look for that common ground and form alliances across party lines. But it's also important to remember that as governor, I have veto authority. So I can veto bad bills. I can line item veto certain legislation. I can set priorities for agencies. I can set agency heads. I can select who's in charge of the Department of Forestry, for example. There's judicial appointments as well. So there's tremendous influence and control that the governor has, even if the Democrats are still in control of the legislative majority. I'd also add to that, you know, like I said before, we've been in one-party governance for 40 years. When that switches, and I'm confident it will, that is like a tsunami wave hitting the state and hitting the nation. It will be big. And even if it's a small, win by just a few percentage points, there is a mandate for change that comes with that. And so I, as governor, set the agenda. And so it'll be very clear with that vote what the people voted for. They voted for change in a lot of areas. And I intend to push that agenda through the legislature and form those alliances across party lines when I need to.
One of the things we've observed here in many years of doing interviews is how different the rural areas are from especially the Portland area, but also Eugene, Salem, the more urban areas. And it seems like in a lot of ways, it's kind of having two states in one. How do you get people to work more together to be one state versus these isolated parts that never seem to get along with each other?
Oh, I know. It's very frustrating, first off. I live in an a pretty rural area. I grew up in a rural area. That's where I come from and where I'm at. So I definitely have that perspective, and I see those differences in priorities, and I see it every day in the legislature. But I can also say that our governor and our Democrat leaders in this building are not representing the mainstream interests of Oregonians. They are representing an extreme interest. And I'm saying that because I can go to, I can talk to a cattleman on the east side of the mountains, and I can go downtown Portland and talk to a business owner in downtown Portland. They both have issues with DEQ, for example. They both see way too much overreach, a resistance to actually cooperate. They have the same problems. When I go to downtown Portland, I went to a company, Sheridan Fruit Company, just last week. They've been there for 110 years. Three generations of family working there side by side. They closed their doors. That kind of thing, and I talked to them about why that happened, and it's the homeless situation. And when I talk to them about the solutions of that, you know, it's the same thing I hear in small towns and mid-sized towns around the state. So I know there's this urban-rural divide, but there's also a lot of things that tie us together in common ground, and those are the issues that I want to focus on as governor.
As you look at different agencies, if you were to be governor, are there particular ones that you would want to see some significant or maybe the most significant change in the soonest?
Oh, boy. There's a lot. I mentioned DEQ. That's a big one. I think Dogami is another big one. We have a bounty of natural resources in this state. And we're letting them burn in some cases, and we're ignoring them in other cases. I want to see us unleash that potential while maintaining an amazing environment. And we can do that. We can find balance and bring more economic prosperity to our rural areas. The Department of Education is a big one. You know, in Oregon, the superintendent of public education is the governor. I will get the Department of Education focused back on basics. I will get the DEI out of the schools. I will reduce administration overhead and put more money into the actual classroom instead of overhead. And a lot of nonsense that I've talked to teachers. They're as frustrated as I am about the state of the schools. And then we have ODOT. I've picked on ODOT a lot over the last few months because of this referendum. But they're another agency that has really lost focus. When their number one priority in their strategic plan is equity, you know, equity doesn't fill potholes, it doesn't make our roads safe, they are off mission. And so that's another one. So that's just a sampling.
How do you feel like the governor should work with the federal level on funding from Washington, D.C., or coordinating with the federal agencies for the work of the state agencies?
Well, I believe that we should have a strong working relationship with the federal government, regardless who's in power. I'd say our governor today is more interested in suing and screaming at the sky instead of actually cooperating and working with the feds on a transparent basis. And I think the biggest example of that is with what's going on with federal immigration officers. Our governor has made the situation worse by her actions. I think the best thing we can do is actually cooperate with the federal government, make sure that gang members and human traffickers and prostitution ringleaders are not in our state. And that requires some level of cooperation with the federal government. And that is one thing I'll bring to the governor's office, as well as transparency and communication, so we understand what the federal immigration officers are doing and what their priorities are.
Got a minute left. State Representative Ed Diehl running for governor. In that final minute, what would you say to encourage folks as they look towards the primary to consider voting for you?
Well, what I would ask is, who is the best person to take on Tina Kotek? And I have taken her on head on with this referendum. and won. And I am the best person to continue to remind the Oregon voters what she did. And she took what she knew was a wildly unpopular bill and rammed it down our throats anyway, thinking that she could get away with it. I think I'm the best person to do that. And also something I heard over and over again through that effort is we have given Oregonians hope for the first time in a long time. I want to build on that and build that momentum and carry that momentum through the primary and through the general election and have the biggest turnout of conservatives that we have had in decades. And that is my goal.
And how do people find out more about your campaign, maybe on your campaign website? Where's that?
EdDeihl.com. EdDeihl.com.
All right, State Representative Ed Deihl, Republican candidate for governor. Thanks for being on.
Hey, thank you, Kyle.
1256 News Radio, 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This has been Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. Listen every weekday afternoon at 1230 to stay connected with what's happening in your community. Today's interview will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it with others and let them know where they can hear it. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications. Stay connected with local news and information. News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.